Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences on related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. We'd like to invite you to visit our website, towardthelight.org, for information about our organization and the services and support that we provide, not the least of which is this radio program, and also visit our media site, towardthelight.info, and this will also give you a lot of information about the media work that we are doing centered on near-death experiences. This week, I am very pleased to have back a special guest, actually two guests, who were on my show before, and we're going to be speaking with Father Billy Clark and his wife, Tiffany Snow. Tiffany Snow is a fellow near-death experiencer who had an NDE in 1999 in Franklin, Tennessee, as a result of lightning. So let's welcome to Toward the Light, Billy Clark and Tiffany Snow. Hello to both of you and welcome to Toward the Light.
Hi.
Hi, we're happy to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. And I was listening to the archive show last night when you were talking about your tremendous experiences with your NDE in Franklin. And, of course, I lived in Nashville and in Franklin, so I know exactly the areas that you're talking about there, and I actually moved to Tennessee in January of 99, so we were both there at the same time. Now, something that is very interesting, yes, you did have the near-death experience as a result of trying to rescue one of your dear horses, and lightning struck, and there's always very, very powerful NDEs that result from that. Now, something that I want to ask you about is, were you a mystic? I know that you've had direct communion and communications with Source and also with other spirit guides. Did this happen as a result of your near-death experience, or was this always intact as you were growing up as a child, Tiffany?
Growing up as a child, I had always known and felt connected to God and creation. But as I grew up, I gave my power away to others.
Yes.
And so the near-death experience, I believe mine was a divine strike, a reawakening to remember who that I was and also to get me back into the purpose of why I came. And my life, my spiritual life, re-began with that near-death experience, and it's been an incredible journey since then. And I can hear Father clearly.
Well, it's so interesting because when I was thinking about it last night myself, I thought this was a beautiful opportunity for indeed a reawakening and remembering, because as a result of religious dogma and all kinds of other not so positive influences, you didn't even believe in the reality of the near-death experience. And personally, I don't know how anybody can slough it off as a hallucination or the product of a dying brain, because those things are completely different from the near-death state. And also the after effects that occur, plus the fact that there is never the clarity of memory when one just simply has a hallucination or what have you. But this catapulted you onto a very powerful path as a result, thank goodness, of that reawakening and remembering. And, several months ago, actually, now it has been, there were the horrific fires that took place in Southern California. And I believe it was either Yolaine Stout or Beverly Brodsky, lovely friends who've both been on Toward the Light, who forwarded an article that you had written about your experiences with this fire, which I thought was very profound. And, of course, as you know, it has been featured and spotlighted on my website, towardthelight.org, ever since I received it. So I would like to talk to both of you, Tiffany and Billy, about the profound experiences that you had with these fires, because it was your listening to the voice of your guides that actually ended up protecting you. So that's why I was also asking you, you know, was this connection or this awareness intact as a child, which it sounds like it was, and then it kind of faded or you pushed it down as a result of the negative influences in your life, and then the NDE brought this back to you. So why don't we get into, again, what were the dates of these fires? Was that, what, December? When did the fires occur?
It was in October.
In October, okay. See, I'm in a total time warp, too, because I've got no sense of time-space, and yeah. I can't recall time. So it was in October of last year. Fires broke out, what, all over Southern California?
Yes, and actually where we were at was one of the first ones. A lot of people around didn't know what was going on. In fact, before we went to bed that Sunday night, we looked at the latest fire information on TV, and we said our prayers and felt safe. And we always said special prayers for our land, and there's two other families that live there in the Avocado Grove. And we listened for divine guidance, protection, and direction in all things. And this fire, which came to be known as the Witch Fire, there were several fires that merged in Southern California, but it was miles and miles away near a town called Ramona, and there was no information at all given about evacuating where we were on Highland Valley Road.
Now, where are you located? Because is that somewhere near San Diego? Is that correct? Or
yes,
where?
We're north of San Diego. So if you imagine sort of between L.A. and San Diego, we're closer to San Diego than L.A. We're sort of we're out on a country road up on a hill. There's a lot of different avocado orchards and a lot of beautiful homes around.
Okay. Yes, I remember praying. Boy, I was praying and sending Reiki like crazy. I remember that. And when you were last on my show, you were talking about the Reiki work that you do too, and my hands just became red hot.
Yes.
And I could really, I felt a profound peace come over me also as I was sending the Reiki, and I was just doing this repeatedly.
Right.
For the longest time.
So, yes, that connection of love. I've found it that it doesn't matter if it's called Reiki or therapeutic touch or whatever kind of healing or connection of love, but it is that connection with divine source that makes those miracles happen.
Yes.
So this healing's been called different things in all different parts of the world, but it's that connection to divine love, to God, where everything transforms.
Absolutely. And it's just one of the creative tools or modalities or mediums used, just like when I'm making music. It's all channeling love, but I use the piano or I use my voice to channel that love.
Right, so, like a touchstone.
Exactly. This is lovely. So go ahead and share with us some of the events, because I remember the first line of your articles, the voice says, go back into the fire.
Yes, yes.
So tell
when
us
we went to
it.
Bed, we weren't concerned, but within only a few hours, it would be really a matter of life and death to be able to listen to that voice inside, because we would be in literally a firestorm of flame and cinders, and we ended up being surrounded with no open roads or discernible way out at all. Earlier that day, the wind had been blowing very fiercely. The Santa Ana winds they were gusting down the mountain and through the avocado grove, and there's always a thick layer of leaves on the ground from the trees, and it seemed like half of those had been blown against the house and piled at our front door.
Now, when did you become aware of the fire? Because you said that when you went to bed, there had been no signs of fire or need to evacuate or anything.
That's right. That's right. Just the wind had been blowing, and we just checked the TV before we went to bed to see what was going on with the fire. At that time, we just thought it was a small, localized fire. In fact, that day I'd opened the windows and was just happy to see the fall season change. But there was, Billy noticed a light layer of dust on the counter when we closed the windows, and there was a slight smell like a campground cooking fire in the air.
Mm.
And Highland Valley Road, where we're situated, is it's a ridge high above the San Pasquale Valley, near the San Diego Wild Animal Park, if you know where that's at.
No, I've never been there.
Okay. And the sunsets are, and views are just wonderful. But it's about a seven-mile road from the freeway up the mountain that winds and turns for miles.
Now, when you say freeway, is that the motorway?
The I-15. There's an Interstate 15
okay. That
runs between San Diego and L.A.
Okay.
And actually where we're at, we're on the outskirts of three towns, of Escondido, of Poway, and Ramona. And why I'm bringing that up is because it seems the city officials didn't really know what area that any of Highland Valley was in, because on that night of the fire, none of us who lived on the ridge got reverse 911 calls to evacuate.
Oh.
Okay. So
there was a loophole somehow. There.
Yes, yes.
Whoa.
It is thought that each assumed that another area was responsible for making those calls, and it left a gap in the system that left an entire area without warning. That's why when you see on the TV news and media about the fire, that they talk about exactly where we live, because it was one of the hottest spots of the fire, and because none of us were given any indication of to go or when to go.
That's really something. Well, then, you know, I only found out about all of this through word of mouth, because I don't have a television and I don't watch television, so I always get my information via somebody contacting me or the Internet. So that's how I found out about the fire. Some people actually let me know, and I went to work straight away sending love and prayers and Reiki.
Well, I found out about it a different way when my wife yelled at me, "Get out of bed, the fire's here."
Oh, boy. Okay, so that's what happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was quite an awakening. I was laying in bed, and she said, "The fire's here," and I looked right outside the window, and everything was orange. It was it was pretty intense. You could feel the heat already just coming through the windows, so there wasn't much time to do anything. In fact, I just threw on some clothes real quick, and I said, "Grab the laptops." We do a lot of writing, so all of our stuff is on laptops. And then I went to grab the cats, and they got a little bit scared and freaked and ran under the couch and then ran under the bed and wouldn't come out. And then we had less than 20 seconds to get out of the house before the flames overcame us, so I couldn't even stop to wrangle the cats to get them in the car. So we just made it into the vehicle itself, and it was pretty hairy right there.
Now,
and
were you hearing the flames when you ran to your vehicle?
Well, this was about 3 a.m. Monday morning,
uh-huh.
And I had still been in the living room on the computer, and Billy had gone to bed a bit earlier. And I was, you know, involved in my work, and I heard a distinct voice in my mind say, "We can't hold it back any longer. You must leave."
Wow.
And so I looked up wondering what is going on, and then the adrenaline shot through my body. And just as Billy was saying, the house was surrounded by orange glowing smoke, and bright flames are racing toward the house from all sides. And it was in a circle, I'd say probably about 300 feet away. And so that's when I yelled to Billy, "The fire is here." And so I actually grabbed an old Star Wars T-shirt with the slogan, Jedi, may the Force be with you.
That's wonderful.
And I got the two laptops because, you know, they have all of our business and book information on. And as a healer, and then 3 years ago is when the stigmata started happening about every month. So we had lots of experiences of unusual things and all the notes. So,
wow.
You know, the information that comes through those divine connections weren't to be lost. So
sure.
I left my wedding ring, I left photo albums, but grabbed the laptop.
You remind me of me being up till 3 a.m. working away, writing, designing websites, doing all kinds of stuff. Oh, boy, so relate. And it's so precious, that information that we glean and then pass on to others. So go
yes,
ahead.
And I wouldn't have known what was going on, except I very distinctly heard, we can't hold it back any longer. You must leave. So that's what we did. And as Billy was saying, we only had a few seconds to do this. And it was breaking our hearts to not be able to catch the cats. But, you know, as I got in the car, I yelled to him, we can't wait. Come now. Because the flames, I know what that saying, as fast as wildfire, means.
Yes.
Because it just did this so quickly. So we're sitting in the car, and he looks over at me and he says, which way do we go? Because all around us was flames, and it was entirely upon us now. All the leaves were burning, the smoke was everywhere, everything was orange. You couldn't tell where to go. So that's when I listened. You know, each of us has free will, for either love or for fear. And love moves us forward.
Exactly.
Fear stagnates and freezes us. And this was not a time to be frozen. So I prayed for the clarity to be able to hear. And my heart was racing, but my mind was calm. You know, you never know how you're going to behave in the midst of trauma. But, and it really is strength beyond ourselves when we reach out beyond our bubble and connect. And my mind was calm. And I was told we were to go up the driveway and then head down Highland Valley Road to the I-15 freeway. When we started up the driveway, the flames were everywhere. And, in fact, our house and area, we were evidently in a pocket because it looked like the fires had been burning much longer around us. Our homes in the avocado grove are behind a big wooden gate, which opens by electricity. Now, this happened about 3 a.m. in the morning. We still had lights on at our house to be able to get out. But in the few moments that it took to go from our house to the gate, the electricity had gone out and the gate wouldn't open.
Oh, no.
And on the way there, we saw that the car in front of the caretaker's little trailer was gone, so we knew he had probably left. But the main house was way up on the top of the hill. And they're an active but older couple, and so I listened, and I prayed, are we supposed to go up there? And I got the answer, no. So, because I know that they couldn't get out as quickly as was needed. So I paid attention to that and had trust. And I didn't feel any more compulsion to go up. I trusted I was hearing what I needed to hear. And then Billy got out to open up the gate.
And it was what's known as the pray and pull, because it was a big gate.
Oh.
So, you know, the gate itself, being an electronic gate, it's a heavy wooden gate, and it wasn't going easily. So I said a little prayer and pulled, and it flew open, and then got right back in the car. And what I remembered about it was a little bit hairy getting back in because you couldn't really see, and ash was everywhere. So I didn't want to leave the car door open either. I wanted to get back in as fast as I could. So then we got in and proceeded to drive down the road.
And the only way you knew where the road was, because it was the only black strip through the orange flames, is the only place the fire wasn't.
That's interesting.
And every house that I could see through the orange mist was a bonfire. Any place that there was fuel, the fire was taking as its own. And I asked the holy angels to try to save our cats, even our home, if possible. And I got the answer, clear as day, we will try our best. And it's, you know, we're newlyweds. It'll be 2 years this June. And all of our wedding pictures, my original songs from when I was in the music business, all my paintings would be gone. You know, the statue of Mary that weeps whenever Holy Stigmata would happen, the two statues over the bed that did the same, would be burned. You know, how could they not be? You know, so I decided, okay, I'll be happy to get out with our lives. And I asked God simply for that and prayed safety for all those around. Because, you know, really, all these other things are just material and can be replaced. Yes. And one of the things that I took comfort in is knowing that every song had been played. And every moment in our lives is not only recorded in our hearts, but recorded with the big guy, recorded in the cosmos. None of that can ever be truly lost. The energy continues forever in the mind of God and expands out. So here I am in the midst of the fire, and I have contentment, and I remember even smiling. And my husband said, I can't see the road, hold on. I said, I left my wedding ring. You know, I felt bad about that. And he said, it's okay, so did I.
Oh.
And we bypassed another road that goes down off the side of the mountain called Bandy Canyon. And I listened, and we were again told to just keep going straight down the 7 miles of the road to the freeway. And I thought, well, maybe if we got down off the mountain part that the fire would be better. Instead, it was as bad as, if not worse there. I mean, imagine you're driving in a car, and the heat inside your car is so bad that you're wondering if your gas tank's going to catch on fire.
That's what I was thinking about, yes.
And Billy's a priest, and there was a white alb in the back seat. I grabbed it and found a bottle of holy water under the seat and saturated a corner of it, and we put the cloth over our mouths to breathe through because our lungs were burning and our eyes were tearing from the smoke.
Mm, goodness me.
And as we were going down the road, we were watching every burning power pole and watching for any lines or trees that had fallen across the way. And as we got down onto the flat, the road splits between a swampy flatland on one side and a water treatment plant on the other. So you really have to stay on the road. There's little room for error. And we ran off the road. But amazingly, at the intersection there, only the front tires started to drop off the road. And Billy recognized it, and easily we moved the car back onto the road. And we had to gun the car at times to make it through areas where the trees were on fire and hanging over the road.
And so you had to do what to the car?
Had to gun it or, you know, floor it to be able to make it through.
Yes, because the trees were bursting into flame. In fact, we came upon a car in the middle of the road completely engulfed in flames and burning.
Oh, dear.
And so, you know, immediately we're concerned, is there somebody, you know, in it? Is there something we can do? And the angel said, no, nobody was burning in the car, that the person was safe. So we went over as far as we could from it and gunned it again and made it by. So basically we were going through this, through the fire, with one ear to the heavens and one to the earth. And now we're almost to the freeway, only about maybe a quarter of a mile left out of these 7 miles. And the smoke was less here. We only had to pass by a plant nursery, and then we'd be free. And I saw a horse trailer ahead of us, and then they disappeared into the smoke. The smoke was all of a sudden getting much thicker in front of us. And we came upon people alongside the road who had gotten out of their cars. And one man flagged us down and said, is it safe to go the other way? And he said, we can't get through this way. The flames are over the road. We can't get out. The nursery was on fire. So then I saw a vision in my mind's eye, how it was okay to drive through on the road, but that it must be quick. And I saw that people would actually panic as the flames blew from one side to the other over them. So I saw vehicles losing control and blocking the way. And then people would be stuck there, and then people would be hurt. It was like a TV screen rolling before my eyes, showing what was about to happen. And then I heard a voice say, "Turn back, go back into the fire." My first reaction was, "What?"
For goodness sake.
And then I said it out loud. I said, "Billy, turn around and go back into the fire." And my husband, he turned at me and said, "What? Let's just make sure you're hearing right. You're under a lot of stress."
How did you feel, Billy, when she was...
That's when you want to make sure you're really hearing everything clearly.
Wow.
You know, there's often that joke about how men never listen to their wives. Well, this husband did.
Or getting directions, right?
Yes.
Oh, me. Oh, wow.
So we turned around and went back up the hill just as fast as we had come down it. Back up into the fire, back up past all the telephone lines and power poles that are burning, and even though we were so close to the freeway, and I remember Billy saying, you know, "Are you sure? Just one more time." And with full confidence, I said, "Yes, I knew that I was putting both our lives into the hands of the big guy, as he knew the way out."
And that's what you refer to as source, correct?
As God, yes.
Okay. Now, were you able to see anything, either of you?
Well, to see anything, you mean literally...
Right, you know, the road where you were going, what have you.
Well, it was a little bit tricky because everything was... orange, I mean bright
yeah.
orange. And,
wow.
It was, and then on top of that, from all the smoke, you could only see maybe 10 or 15 feet in front of you maximum.
And the wind blowing sparks of burning things everywhere. It was like little cinders going everywhere.
That had to be surreal.
Oh, yeah.
It was like you were in a war zone.
Oh, yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes. And so, you know, I've had enough experience since the near-death experience when he said, "Heal my children, help them remember who they are."
Yes.
I've seen miracles happen under my hands thousands of times, and seen the new medical reports and PET scans and blood work and these life-changing things. So I had gained enough trust to be able to now put our lives in that place of believing that the big guy and the angels knew what they were doing.
Yes. I share that experience, actually, and it's very, very powerful, and I can't emphasize enough how very important it is to listen to that voice speaking to us, even if it doesn't make sense in the moment. And also, maintaining a calm composure is so important, and not giving in to the fear. This is tremendous. Go ahead, love.
And so, you know, even then, in my analytical mind, I'm thinking, well, maybe this is because now Bandy Canyon has opened up, that other road that we had bypassed. But that wasn't the case. As we got on top of the ridge and we neared the intersection between Bandy Canyon and Highland Valley, we saw through the haze two fire trucks sitting in the road. And they were by one of the few places that the eucalyptus trees were still untouched. And we rolled down our window and the smoke billowed into the car. And the man there, and I mean, they look like they have all the gear to walk on the moon.
You can
barely see the firefighter inside of all of this.
Wow.
And he had his radio with him, and he said, "Turn around, it's the only way out." And we said, "No, we were just there." So the man got on his radio and confirmed. He said, "Right, there's no way out. Just sit tight here for a minute." So so he went to the truck and he came back with a couple bottles of water and a couple of just simple cloth filter masks and said, we can't do anything else here. We're going to try to get down the mountain. Put your car in between us. So we were basically going to be escorted down in between two large fire trucks. Well, at that moment, a small pickup truck with Hispanic workers in the back of it careened off the road and hit the back of the other fire truck beside us.
That's how thick the smoke was. Even with all their lights on the fire truck, the small little pickup truck couldn't even see the fire truck.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Were they hurt when they did that?
No, but they scared the firefighters. They didn't see them coming either, so they screamed, and then they realized they were in trouble too. So they told us they told them to hang tight a second as well.
And they placed both of our vehicles. They told us to both be between the other two, and that we were going to be leaving in a few minutes, and they would escort us down. And they have the manual spotlights to check each crossing of the power lines. And I checked with the big guy and was told this was the safe place that God wanted us to be right now. And then I heard the divine voice come again saying, you must move. There will be a flare-up over the road in 5 minutes.
Oh.
And then I said, Booey, we have to go now. Tell them we have to move now. And then the voice said, 4 minutes.
Wow.
And then the fireman knocked on our car, and we rolled our window down. And I leaned over and said, we have to go now. And I just, you know, shouted across Billy's lap, we only have a few minutes. And the fireman, he seemed a bit taken back by my forcefulness, but assured us that they're getting in their trucks now. So when divine voice, when the angel said, 2 minutes, we started moving, and it was like a caravan going through an alley of sorrow and hope, and I looked behind us, and the fire then raged right onto the trees, overcoming the trees right where we had been parked.
Goodness me. So which direction did you head? Were you heading back again towards the motorway?
Yeah, back the original way.
Oh, boy, zigzag.
Yeah, and by this time I was a little bit scared because obviously the fire had burned over more, so there was more things to be careful of, more things in the road.
So now we continued the miles, and then we created a place of safe passage, where people wouldn't be stopping in the midst of the smoke and maybe getting overcome by the flames. So, and we were able to safely pass the nursery on the backside of Rancho Bernardo and other cars falling in behind the other fire trucks, and we got onto the freeway and into safety. So many homes and new constructions as well had burned, but I knew that also many would be saved and that this would be a time of miracles for many people, and a lot of people would be having stories of their own Thanksgiving on this night.
So what happened once you made it to the motorway?
Well, we drove south because north was sealed off by the local police, and we went to find a hotel in San Diego. We were coughing but praising God for our lives and divine direction.
Yes.
And making phone calls all along the way and finding out our landlords were safe. They'd actually been nowhere near the fire. They'd been visiting in L.A. with friends, and our caretaker was safe as well. We called our families. No one knew what had been happening. And when we got to the hotel, we asked to book for a few days. We were told they could only promise a couple of nights because they were expecting a big convention in town.
Oh, dear.
We told them things would be different than what they think this week.
Yes, yes.
There was going to be an overload from people leaving their homes.
Now, how did you make the phone calls? Was the telephone service was obviously still intact?
Well, that was the nice part is that where we were driving down, we still had cell phones.
And
at that time, the towers were not down yet.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
That's the good thing about mobile phones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we collapsed on the bed, and And Billy went and bought some food and clothes, since literally all we had was the two computers and the shirts on our back.
Yes.
The nice thing is the next day we booked a flight to New York to stay with relatives. And first I asked about that, too, because we both wanted to stay here if there was anything at all that we could do. And we were told that it didn't matter where we went, that we were indented to the fire, and with that as a touchstone, we would be able to help manifest changes and participate with the angels with this from wherever we chose to go. So we boarded the plane with our laptops in a canvas health food grocery store bag and our clothes in the Jedi t-shirt. I tied the sleeves together into a knot to make a bag, and you know, it was really surreal, you know, and people looked at us pretty strangely at first, and when we had the chance to explain, they were always moved, there were always tears in their eyes, and they seemed to understand how indeed, you know, the force, the mighty force, God had been with us, and how people are more important than things.
Absolutely. This is so tremendous. And so you went to New York.
Yes, and I remember, you know, there was just a peace, a calmness about it, even in the midst of all this anxiety. I remember teasing Billy, saying that this was one way to get out mowing the lawn, and how he always wanted me to pack lightly for travel.
I didn't think we could pack any lighter than what we did.
Oh, wow.
So we were there watching, you know, it was all over the news by then, so 2 days went by and three, and we were watching TV. And
actually what had happened was there was initially only two or three fires, but they started connecting and they started spreading, so eventually it came up to about 15, 16 different fires that were all converging.
And over thousands of acres.
Now, where in California? I had heard something about Malibu, which I think
is... Well, that's the thing, too. There was fires up there in the north of L.A., and then there was fires to the east that were coming up right around the Mexico border, and then there was fires in the northeastern part where we lived. So all those fires were starting to come together, and we're heading towards San Diego as well.
And, of course, I was wanting to see if there was any information I could get about our house on Highland Valley Road. You know, I was concerned about the kiddies. And when we get afraid or the anxiety comes in, you know, that's when you start to clog up any information you can receive.
That's a good point, Madeira. Yes, indeed.
You know, inside I felt everything was okay, as if a bubble surrounded our area. But the news that we constantly heard just wasn't good. For example, some neighbors above us had actually received phone calls by their friends, by many friends, and had been told to leave. But later their bodies were found charred in the debris. They hadn't paid attention, even when the big guy used literal people to contact them to say, get out of here. And the neighbors across from us had survived by jumping in the pool with towels over their heads, and then they watched as their house burned down. Others had driven their van into an empty field and lived. And, you know, so there was divine direction available for all. You know, the big guy gives opportunities to each of us.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And through it all, you know, I kept holding out hope for our little home, and you know, especially the kitties. And I got on the computer and looked at the Google Earth, which shows close-up maps, and it looked like our home was gone. There was no roof apparent, just a white square area where a house should be. It looked like white ash. And this was difficult for me to see, because I could see some other homes that were still around, and I could distinguish that there was ceramic tiles on their roofs.
So Google Earth is actually in real time then, correct?
Some of it. It depends. They update different areas too. And sensitive areas or war areas, it's not.
Wow, okay.
They were being really good about the fire areas. They were updating that constantly.
Interesting, wow.
And everyone, you know, including Billy, because he wanted me to, you know, be okay about stuff, said I should just let it go, you know, hold no hope for the house. That, you know, it was really, how could anything survive what we had just driven through?
Mm.
So by the morning of the fourth day, you know, I convinced myself that they were probably right. It was just me being hopeful. I mean, at the Divine Wellness Institute, you know, our business mantra is be realistic, expect a miracle. So I was still in that mode. So on the morning of the fourth day, I gave up the thought. And in fact, a friend of ours here took the steps to secure a rental home for us, to have something to come back to, and was volunteering to furnish it. And it's times like these that truly show what's deep in the heart of each person, and we'll bring it to the forefront. Even as the TV news reported that some people were going behind the fire lines and looting homes, other people were opening theirs up to strangers.
There you go. And that's, you know, that's a good example of a myriad of reasons why I refuse to watch television. It's so toxic and so full of lies, and it's just very, very dark and negative. So, you know, my computer monitor is quite enough television for me, as it were.
If you view it as a prayer list,
good point.
A place for transformation, then you can actually use it as a tool for good. But mm-hmm. I understand where you're coming from. I mean, in the midst of the flames, I had seen beings. I saw unholy angels, and they were delighting in this destruction. This fire wasn't, you know, what's so-called act of nature or an act of God. The big guy's all about love, not punishment.
Exactly.
And, you know, he desires to save us out of whatever problems are. In fact, a few days before the fire, we were given an illustration about how we're all asked to be the mystic. Each one of us to hear him for ourselves.
Yes.
And the illustration he gave was, as the arrow leaves the bow for your destruction, you will be told to move right or to move left, and you must do so without hesitation and without question. We had no idea this would be literal for us in just a few days.
Indeed, indeed. Well, wonderful, wonderful points you're making here, Tiffany. This is tremendous.
So later on in that same fourth day in the afternoon, we got a phone call from our landlords, and they said, "We're calling you from inside your house. It is here. Everything is intact, and I put food and water out for your cats. Our home is still here, too, and is fine, and even the caretaker's trailer." And he said, "Everything around us is gone. Part of the grove is damaged." And he used the words, "It's a miracle."
Wow.
And I just cried with amazement. I mean, when the angels say they're going to try their best, there's a lot to that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But they do a pretty impressive best.
Isn't that stunning? When I was reading that article, I just thought, I've got to have them come on the show and talk about this.
It's definitely astounding.
There's so many powerful and relevant points in all of this. You know, how, I mean, I can't tell you the number of clients and friends and just casual acquaintances will talk to me about experiences they have, and then they're questioning, oh, am I crazy or can I trust this? And I tell each and every one of them how imperative it is that they listen to that voice speaking within them. And I also point out that everyone by nature is a natural mystic, a natural medium.
We all have that opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know, how many of us are going to listen?
Well, hopefully more and more now.
That's right. Yeah. Ideally, huh?
And that's why it's about remembering who we are, that we're sparks off that divine flame.
Absolutely.
That connection is there. I mean, it's unreasonable that our place exists, just as it was unreasonable to turn around and drive back into the fire. And I've learned so much from this experience. I've learned that seeing with my literal eyes, like I did with the Google Earth, can sometimes distract from seeing the real truth through the eyes of faith.
Now, you know, that's another very interesting point, because as everyone may know, my eyes are visually impaired. And I have really grown to appreciate that fact, because I am not so easily distracted by the stuff of the physical plane, and instead am I able to see interdimensionally and see the deeper truth of what is going on and what is also forthcoming.
Beautiful.
So I've really embraced the blindness as a gift and as a friend because of this very thing. And, you know, when my daughter would be with me and she'd say, "Oh, Mom, it's a good thing you can't see this." And she would make a point about something. And I've just been really feeling such profound gratitude and seeing the perfection in the lack of physical sight, so that I can, you know, see what's really important.
And that's been your choice, to take a place of struggle and to not see the darkness of it, but to look for the light in it.
Absolutely.
And that's what Father asks us to do, because he doesn't bring anything bad to us. I mean, there's genetics, accidents, all different kinds of things that create struggles in our life. But he does help us to focus on what the light is and to learn love in all these different opportunities. And I learned a lot. I learned that divine directions, even there in times of ultimate stress, we don't have to worry that when we're faced with life and death decisions that we won't be able to hear, because if we ask for that calmness, it'll be given. And I also learned that, contrary to stereotype, there are men who will ask for directions and listen to their wives.
even if there's fire around.
Yeah.
Wow.
I ran the whole gamut of emotions during the fire, the joy, the sadness, the melancholy, loss and elation.
Okay, go ahead. What were you saying?
I've ran the gamut of emotions with this fire, the joy and sadness, thinking everything's gone, loss, elation of refinding it again. Now, for me, it's been similar to the stigmata, like a resurrection while still in the body, a rebuilding from the inside out. And there are many people digging out from the ashes, and people will either choose to praise God for their life and the lives of their loved one, or blame him for the losses that have occurred, just like you just were saying about your eyesight.
Yes.
And, you know, you're not blaming anybody or focusing on the loss, but you're focusing on the positive and how you've been able to transform that. Because there really are only two choices, love or fear.
Exactly, exactly.
And the love moves us forward to rebuild.
And what's interesting, too, you know, I've been deathly ill throughout the bigger part of my life, especially as a child, no less, a child, adolescent, and young adult. And with all of that, it was interesting, sometimes, at the risk of sounding a little stranger, I savored those experiences because it enabled me to really pierce that veil and be close to Source again. And then during my near-death states, I had that assurance that everything was unfolding and evolving exactly the way it should, that everything would be taken care of. And I experienced no fear whatsoever, and there was a tremendous calm, a tremendous peace, a stillness, and a knowing. And I think that a lot of NDEers, and I'm sure this sounds familiar to you as well, that with that knowing that you experienced during your near-death state, you carry that back into this plane with you, and are able to call upon that because you remember everything is in perfect order, despite all appearances. And then when we can be in that calm place of unconditional love, then yes, we can see clearly and we know what to do. So this is just a tremendous you know, testimony of all of this.
And I truly believe that we all have defining moments in our lives, whether it comes through a near-death experience or not. I mean, one of the things that I was told at that time was that the flesh is the test of the spirit. And certainly I've seen that being a healer, where people start to ask the bigger questions. Am I happy? Am I fulfilling the purposes in my life? What happens after the body's gone? Is there life after death? Does God exist? All of these things, but it was a defining moment, and that can also come through job loss or relationship loss or different things. We all have those opportunities in front of us to either choose love or to choose fear. And truly, for the San Diego area and all the other areas that were hit by the fire, it was a lot of, there was a lot of people who this was a defining moment for. I mean, and the heroic firefighters, many who lost their own homes as they were protecting other areas and guided so many to safety. And for the police who helped keep people calm and directing their exits. And for all those who listened to the voice inside of them telling them go this way or go that way or jump in the pool or whatever it may be. I mean, so many people who have lost so many things have found a new freshness, a new freedom of being thankful for their lives and seeing everything else just as an additional perk along the way, whether they have their material things or not. And all these thousands of homes and thousands of acres that have burned, and just a handful of people who had lost their lives, that is a miracle as well. So when we use our free will and we go beyond our own energy and connect with divine energy, we have unlimited resources and guidance. And that's where we can trust and expand and allow ourselves to be safely led, listening to God's voice and our own that He's placed within us.
Now, how would you encourage people to trust in their own experiences with that voice?
It's building a relationship. Just like when you are dating somebody, you don't know much about that person at first until you spend more time with them. And until finally you even know what their thoughts or what they would say, even if you're not in with them right there in front of you. That's that same place that God draws us towards Him, that same place of passion, that same place within us that where we look for hope, where we look for the transformation, where we look for the change. All the answers are there. We've been given so much information. You know, with the stigmata, first it's I see it as third person, then I experience it myself, and then after that there's so much information that is open. Each time it's like a near-death experience, and Billy writes down all the information. He's been with me from the beginning with this, and it's all about connection and communion and knowing that we are living in a time of shift, and the dark will get darker but the light's getting brighter, and love wins, and we're of that love. So it's all good news.
Yeah, and to have hope for what's to come, too.
I think so, too, and it's a very good point. In fact, I've been sharing this with other people as well, is that the light is getting brighter all the time.
Oh, yeah, a lot more people waking up.
Oh, big time, and it's a very exciting time, even though, indeed, it is a challenging one. Now, tell our listeners, let's explain the stigmata a little bit. When did that start, and what is it exactly that takes place, if you don't mind sharing that?
It started over 3 years ago now, ever since the near-death experience, that reconnection with God. It's been a sped-up spiritual time. And stigmata was part of that. At my near-death experience, Jesus appeared in front of me all these sparks came together in this beautiful head and shoulders of a very large person was there. And when he spoke, he said, what have you learned? And a life review occurred. And, you know, my near-death experience is a very long one as well. But it was at that time that that we were introduced, I guess you could say. That time of stigmata is a time of communion, a time of sharing. You know, basically the big guy has always used signs and wonders throughout time because he knows it's difficult because we can't see him. It's like you can't see the wind, but you can see the leaves move. Well, he has used stigmata, he's used healing, he's used prophecy, he's used so many things in all different religions in all parts of the world. In fact, that's one of the things that we were told is that that people of all religions would be having stigmata. It's not just a Christianity thing, because God is beyond religion.
Yep, and in fact, one of the more interesting parts, just like we just talked about with the light becoming lighter, is when she first started experiencing stigmata, there was only 5 other people in the world that had it. And the last time she went through it and we asked about it, there's now over 230 people experiencing stigmata in the world currently.
Wow.
And people of all different religions and all different traditions and backgrounds as well.
Yes. Hindu people, amazing. That same place of our original parents pulling away from love and the big guy being of light. So it's that place of balancing that Christ came and was a perfect man and didn't pull away from love. So now we're in that place of perfect balance. So it is a place of communion, a place of sharing, just another opportunity for us to be able to see with our literal eyes what is unseen. He really does take every opportunity to connect with us. And so when it starts, and it happens usually about every month or so, and it'll last for 3 days or so, and I'll start to get an itching and then a bubbling. I get it in on both hands and both feet. I have a place open in my side, and sometimes I'll have marks on my head. Sometimes I'll have whip marks on my back that open up. But I get transported where I'm actually seeing what's going on, almost like a picture inside of a picture of a TV, and I view what's going on. I'll start smelling the desert. I'll start hearing the bells on the necks of the lambs outside of Jerusalem. And first it's third person, and then I experience it myself. So that place of breaking generational bondage, that place of coming back into the brightness again, because no matter how many lives we would come and live, we could never break that generational bondage that we were sort of born under. I mean, it's like if you drop a cake pan, one of those aluminum cake pans, it's going to have a dent in the mold. So every cake that comes out of it is going to have that dent. You know, that's how we ended up. And so Christ was that place that pounded the dent back out. So now each of us can have that decision to connect, use our free will to do that, or to stay in that place of fear.
And most importantly, gives us that choice of, what do we want to do? Do we want to choose love, or do we choose fear?
So. That is a very important point, too, because, as you may know, and being a musician myself, I really pay attention to frequencies and to energy, and fear is a very low vibrational frequency, and love is a very high vibrational frequency. And it really is true when people say you cannot mix love and fear. You either have got one or the other. And I believe it was Greg Braden who was illustrating this, and how so many points in the way field are missed when one is in a state of fear. So you can't get clarity under any circumstances when you're coming from a place of fear. So, you know, you've really shared a profound and wonderful example of, you know, in the midst of all of this traumatic experiences with the fire, you were able to stay centered in love and receive the guidance that actually carried you to safety and protected your environment.
And it's so nice to be able to share that with one another, because we all go through fires in different ways.
Oh, sure.
In our lives. And, you know, in this time of shift right now, we're going to see more hopelessness. We're going to see a lot of focus on the darkness, and that's where we have to make that choice again about saying, hey, wait a minute, actually the light is getting much brighter too. And seeing that unity happen, seeing people become so much aware of their choices and listening to that voice within themselves beyond religion of habit, beyond muddy metaphysics, but holding all things up, not giving their power away, holding all things up and saying, is this of love? Is this for me? Does this resonate with me? Because there's all kinds of information out there.
We're at the top of the hour, so I want to let our listeners know you are listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and we are speaking with Father Billy Clark and Tiffany Snow about the profound experiences that they had whilst dealing with the fires in Southern California. Okay, go ahead. We've got just about another hour to go here, so this is tremendous. You know, talking about the fear and people making the choice to choose fear or love, and one thing that comes up, and it's interesting, I've heard this with a number of people who have been avowed atheists, for example, and they say, well, you know, if God existed, God would not allow this sort of thing to happen, all of these atrocities and what have you. But actually, I see them as an opportunity to really come to know love. And just, you know, for example, what happened to you, how your not only your home, but that entire estate was enveloped in this protective bubble of love.
Yeah, it was actually so protected. I had left a gallon of gas on the porch that I usually use for the mower.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and there was a pumpkin there that got burnt up, but the gallon of gas was fine.
So it was
pretty well protected.
Wow.
Yeah. And I apologize, I'm going to have to excuse myself. I've got to go teach a class, but I wanted to thank you so much for the opportunity to share with you and let you know how much I appreciate being able to share with you, and certainly reaffirming what you put out there before, and I thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome, Billy. Well, it's
great.
Wonderful having you, and have a wonderful class. And
thank
Tiffany, you can still stay with us, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
great.
I can.
Thank you, and God bless.
Bless you, Billy.
Bye-bye.
In fact, one of the questions that we asked, because after the experience of stigmata and that breaking through the darkness into the light, so much information is given, and I literally see books open in front of me, and on the pages is gold writing in a language that I don't readily understand, and then I read it, and as I read it, it shines into, the letters become very, very bright. And I read it in English, and that's when it's written down. And so that's how we have gotten hundreds of pages of information. And we also get to ask questions. And you know, one of the questions early on is, if God is a God of love, which you know we know in our hearts to be true, then why is there wickedness? Why is there darkness? And we were given the answer of that.
And let me back up just a moment. When you experience this stigmata, so this is where you manifest these wounds on your body, I have come to understand. And do you go into a sort of trance when this happens?
as I'm experiencing this, I'm in a great deal of pain.
You are.
And I'm experiencing what Christ experienced. And during that time, at the heights of the pain, the big guy will pull me out of it, and I'll go into unconsciousness. And during that time, I'm also given much information. And
do you lie down? Are you?
I'm usually in bed, and usually Billy is making sure I don't throw myself onto the floor, onto the furniture, because some of the, especially the whipping part, startles me a lot. But yes, I'm barely conscious of where I am, because it's like I am fully living another life at that time, a different life. Because it's a time of sharing. It's not called stigmata on the other side. It's called a time of sharing. Just like those who take communion of the bread and wine here, it's to represent that connection with God. Stigmata is that time of Him taking us as the bread and the wine. And it's not because of me being any more special than anybody else. It's not about that. He loves all of his kids and wants all of his kids up on his lap. It's just whoever he chooses is a gift from him. It's nothing earned.
Well, I think that our souls, you know, on a soul level, even before we incarnate into this plane, we have this sacred contract, as it were, to fulfill certain things, and of course to learn certain things during this sojourn on this plane. And so I would definitely resonate with what you're saying. It doesn't mean that we're special or more special than anybody else. It's just part of the contract, part of the work that we've been brought here to do. And I was thinking about it last night. You know, there's several times I've been sent back from the other side, and yet other people are allowed to just transition and go home, you know. And I think, goodness me, I certainly took on a heavy load of work. And in a sort of way, it suits my personality because, like you, I'm up until 3 or 4 in the morning. I said, oh, blimey, I better just stop and get some rest, and then I'll start all over again. And I'm passionate about this. I feel so much love and joy in doing this work and all the sharing and the shedding of light.
Yes.
That all of us can mutually do together and independent of one another.
Yes.
And it's exciting.
It really, really is. In fact, I have, as I'm sure many people do, constantly in my mind, especially after a near-death experience, that desire to leave the earth, desire of that oneness and full connection and full acceptance and unity of love again. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this last stigmata, we were told that I have a great desire to leave and also a great desire to stay. And that place of perpetual transition leaves me to be an instrument that is easily used by God.
That is such a good point. In fact, I've been dealing with a really serious health condition, and I'm so grateful I'm maintaining. But what's very interesting about this is that I've been very aware of the fact that I could transition at any time. And my daughter was saying, goodness me, Mom, in all of these years you've just been so anxious to transition, to go home. And she said, this is the first time ever you have not only expressed the desire to go home, but also to hold on for a little bit longer. And it's exactly for the reasons that you just expressed that whatever I can do to really further this work, I'm at such a pivotal place right now where, again, I could transition or hang out just a little bit longer for one more song or what have you, and my only will is to do whatever is going to facilitate the work, you know, however that may manifest itself, that is my only will, is to complete the work.
Yes, and it's a ripple effect for us to stay in the body, to be something literal, a literal touchstone that Father can use to the spiritual. And we're easily utilized that way.
And yet, with what I'm experiencing, I'm feeling no fear. And the wonderful thing that's going on is the tremendous power of prayer. And I can say as I'm sitting here, what a testament to the power of love and prayer, because I swear that it is literally that's keeping me going right now. Now, I am of an age where, you know, people might typically start crossing over. I'm in my 60s. And again, I just think, how strange that people younger than I are getting to transition. And I'm aware of so many people who have been transitioning, and yet I'm still here. So I feel, you know, this great sense of peace. I even feel euphoric, but I feel another very interesting point here is that it's got to be the light that takes me out, not some dark force that's angry with me for sharing the light. And they know that their power is being diminished dramatically at this point, because all over the place there is so much light, there's so much quickening and awakening going on.
Yes. As sparks off of the flame, it's like if you take a little birthday candle and come into a darkened room. Even though there's so much more volume of darkness, it cannot put out even the littlest candle, but the candle can put itself out. So that's why when you let darkness overpower you, then our light dims. So if we remember who we are and we see the divine opportunities that are placed around us, that's that moving forward into love, that moving into light. And pretty soon our little candle is now a torch.
Yes.
And light and dark can't be in the same place together. So if darkness tries to move towards us, it either has to transform into light to be able to be near us, or it has to move away to even exist. So yes, that also creates a big shifting around us. That shift can happen with our friends, where we work, even where we live. And in fact, that same shift also happens with our physical health. And that's why you'll find also adepts of all different spiritual persuasions who live to be very old. Because as you make that choice for love and for light, shifting occurs in many different ways.
And that's a wonderful point you're making, too. At the beginning of the program, when you started talking about the fire, the phrase that kept going through me was baptism of fire. And I kept feeling what a profound example of that, because, and it would be very interesting to find out more about what other people experienced. And I know that when different disasters happen, and I've been through a war, I've been through hurricanes, I've been in a number of situations where I, too, have been left literally with just the clothes on my back. And the interesting thought that came to me was, I am free. And the point of all of this, too, is that wherever there's a death, it's always, always, without exception, followed by rebirth. Always.
Yes.
So the truth is, there is no death. There's just change. There's this transition and transmutation. So I really felt that there was something so profound about you going through this experience with the fire. Have you got anything that you would like to share with us after the fact, special work that you've gotten into as a result, and what this has done for you? Of course, I'm sure that it's enhanced your faith tremendously.
Well, everything we can allow to enhance our faith. I mean, we continue to learn lessons all the time. We continue to utilize our free will to either for either light or and brightening or not. And that's that same place that as we see a shift happening in the world and we see the darkness occur, that we continue to be the light. We continue to shine in the midst of the darkness and not be overwhelmed by it. In that same place that God is unconditional love, I mean, with the near-death experience, I felt like I was a raindrop falling into the ocean. I didn't lose my own identity. I just became greater than I ever thought I could be and felt everything in that place of unity, that place of connection, that place of God's love, fully accepted. Now, so where did the darkness come from? That's that place of free will. The big guy didn't create us as robots. We're not actors in a play. Everything isn't already written and predestined. We have the ability to make choices. We have free will. And it is like a bubble around us, a shield, I guess you could say. So with that free will, we can choose to go beyond our own energy and connect with the big guy. And that's where the miracles happen, the healing miracles, where everything transforms, where the full guidance comes. I mean, I wouldn't have known on my own what to do on getting us out of the fire, but the big guy had the bigger picture. And, you know, there's the holy angels and our guides and the guardian angels and those who are still on the other side who love us, you know, all pulling for us to make the right decisions.
And the important thing, too, Tiffany, is that you listened.
That's that place that we all can.
Yes.
You know, it's simple. I mean, when we come back from these profound experiences, yes, there's many details along the way, but it all goes back to the same thing. Are we going to choose love or not? And that's that original issue, and that's why there's darkness on the earth. God didn't make darkness, but he allowed free will. You know, one of the first things he created was angels, also with free will. Now, they're not robots either, and some unplugged from love. And some issues were brought up. And so now we've had 6,000 years of those issues playing out. You know, the issues are brought up. Man only loves God for what man can get out of God. Man can guide himself successfully on their own without God. No, you can use the word God and love interchangeably here. It isn't a religious thing. And also that if threatened to his very life, he would do anything to save it, including cursing God. So, you know, when mankind was first new, when anything is new is when it's most vulnerable. And that's when the angels that pulled away from love brought those issues up. The big guy could have just recreated more original parents and cut off those unholy angels. But what he did in his love and graciousness, here it was now a question brought up to all the spirit beings and all the other planets in the cosmos. Is love the best way? Do we each know what love is individually? Or do we need to be unified? Do we need to have that connection with God? So basically, we've had over 6,000 years, like a big court case for the evidence to pile up. We've tried as many governments as we can think of. We haven't been able to guide ourselves very successfully on that.
Yeah.
We've had people all throughout time that it didn't matter if they laid down their physical life or not, they weren't going to turn against love. They were going to keep their integrity to that. And that they come to God for more than that they can get out of him. This time of shift that we're living in right now is that time when the original issues come to completion. We were shown that all of the evidence for these court cases are done, and that this will be a question that will never be brought up again in all of the universe because it has been answered here upon the earth. And so we've been able to live through all of our different lives answering those questions. Each life, we come in to polish another facet of love, whether it's receiving love, giving love, forgiveness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, each time. And now we're living at a time when love will fully be realized, where his original, the big guy's original desire for us, that potential that we are on the inside, those fully, those hopes, those dreams, that unity, that place where there's no darkness at all, is coming into being. We're at that place where the evidence has already been piled, and the man is uncurling the piece of paper to just read in front of the court what the answer is, what the verdict is. And that's why things are speeding up everywhere. And that's why mankind has been used as a pawn in a lot of this throughout time. These are bigger issues than just us. It also includes the angels.
Well, there's so many beings that live on a myriad of dimensions, and you know, when I think of all of this, I always like to avoid the words good, bad, right, wrong, all of that, and just think of being in a laboratory and experimenting and finding out what works and what is in balance versus what doesn't work and what is out of balance. So it's all a process of bringing things back into balance, which can only be done through love.
I was told that we are the only creation that doesn't feel it was created. And also that, yes, in this great cosmos and all of these different planets and beings across the grid, that at this time, that everybody who was here in the beginning, all these spirits that were here in the beginning, have been going through this same process and will also be here at the close of this. This will be a great place of testimony to love, no matter where we go throughout the cosmos from here. We were part of this great adventure saying, yes, love is the way. In fact, I was shown that there's not any interaction allowed at this time, that there's actually a bubble around us, and also it includes the moon, of where the unholy angels cannot go out to create any more problems, and where all of those who are here will be staying here if they choose to continue to come back. As you know, between each life, we can continue to come back in, or we can spend some time out and doing some other things for a while.
Yes.
A lot of people who did not need to be reborn again, a lot of those who had polished their facets of love, have chosen to come back during this time anyway because of the great work, because of being the light in the midst of the darkness.
Well, everything is at such a critical mass at this point, and I really resonate with what you're saying, because that's what I felt too for quite some time. I just thought, wow, everything's building up to something really, really magnificent. And even though there are so many challenges, and of course I see challenges as opportunities to experience love and to show the power of love once again, whenever something seemingly negative takes place, I always ask for the message in this experience. What is the message in this? What is it conveying to me? How can I make a positive difference with this? And so,
and that's why Father can utilize you so well and have you be a touchstone for sharing information and giving information, because you are looking for the love in the midst of the darkness.
And I feel such gratitude. I really, really do. Even something painful that happened a couple of days ago, I just said, thank you, God, you know, because I knew that it was actually answering a question that I have been, you know, putting out there. And it's interesting how the answers will come to you, and they can come in a combination of experiences or different signs and what have you.
Yes.
And it just lets you know in no uncertain terms, this is the case. something very beautiful that happened several days ago when my daughter was visiting me. We were taking a walk, and we were walking down the high road that actually leads to my house, and my daughter said, "Mom, look up." And circling above us were not one or two, but 11 hawks. Hawks are messengers. They're very powerful messengers, and we felt something very auspicious about 11 hawks, and they kept circling round and round above us. And I felt such love coming from those birds, and we were beaming love back to them. And then I was in correspondence with another friend in Alabama, and she's also spent a lot of time in Nashville. She also simultaneously was having powerful experiences with hawks. So I'm on happy red alert right now with the messengers. There's something going on, and I feel that something is just about to break open. But the message that I caught, it's not just about me. I'm feeling something global around all of this. Now, it may affect us in individual ways, as it were, as well as something that is going to just be completely global. So
yes, yes, exactly. And that goes beyond religion. That goes beyond culture. A lot of people are feeling that, and there's that unity in that. And that's one of the great blessings that I've seen about Stigmata, because mostly people have seen that or are just aware of that through traditional Catholic faith or through different saints that have died, or and they categorize. And here we are, here I am with Stigmata on my body, and I believe in reincarnation. I have had near-death experiences. I have all these different concepts that are don't fit into the traditional thing. And it's another opportunity for people to go, oh, and ask questions.
Yes.
Because it doesn't matter what path that we're on, and we may feel more comfortable on one path than another. But the thing is, it's not about us looking down about where our feet are or wondering about what rock will be in the road or even the next turn. It's that place of looking at the destination of love. And that's where we accept others wherever they are in their journey and where we don't compare ourselves to others as well. And in fact, when we do that, that's that place that even if we were to look down to where our feet are, it doesn't matter because we see that we're being lifted by wings of angels.
Exactly. And I also see, you know, the different paths and the different choices. Again, being an artist and a musician, I think of just using different mediums, and we're all being creative. We're all in this process of discovery and renewal. So I think it's exciting, and the rainbow doesn't have just one color.
That's right.
And so it is all valid, and that's what I've told people. I remember somebody I encountered in Nashville, and I'm sure this is very familiar to you as well, having lived there in Franklin. He was talking about this God versus that God, and I said, it's all about love. It doesn't matter what program you subscribe to. It's really about love, whatever you call it.
Yes. That's and it. Father will meet them, meet each one of us wherever we're at. So if we feel more comfortable in a traditional way or what our parents did or that's okay. And Father will continue, I mean, just like the word Father, you know, he's not male or female. I say Father because that's what's comfortable with me, because he is that alpha. He is the protector, but he's also very maternal and very nurturing as well.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And it's a very gentle and powerful experience. And again, when you've experienced the other side, and one point I do want to interject is that one needn't go through a death experience in order to have such a profound experience.
Yes.
You can just be playing the piano or riding a horse or meditating or gardening and have these same powerful experiences. And you know, I think it's interesting that it's happening more and more and more.
Yes. And one of the things that we were shown is as the dark gets darker and the light gets brighter, Father will utilize us more and more to be touchstones of spirit. So that same place of there being more people who can do miracle healing, more supernatural things happening, more prophecy, it's that same place. Okay, well, he told me that we were created as co-creators. That's not just about having babies. That's the power of our mind to be able to manifest things into reality.
Indeed.
But because of the choices of our original parents pulling away from love and different things throughout time, our minds often get clouded and our thoughts may not always be the best, but we still have that power. This question was answered because I asked what's the role of the guardian angel, and he always gives me so much more information than what I originally asked. But he gave the example that if a car is coming down the road in the opposite direction and we're driving this way and it just flickers through our mind for a moment that that car would swerve and hit us, that's what would manifest. That's what would happen. But the role of the guardian angel steps in and says, that's not a good one, and stops that from happening. It may happen by another way, but it won't happen by that flicker that just went uncontrolled through our mind. But our positive thoughts and intentions are allowed to fly free. And that's why the more excited that you are about something, the more likely you are to see it come to fruition. But it's also powered by your own energy. So it may not go as far as you want, or you may feel drained by it. Now, there's a third step. Making that positive choice, but going beyond your own energy, connecting to the big guy, connecting to source, and now you have unlimited energy, and that's where everything comes into fruition. That's that place where everything occurs. And that's the place also where The Secret, that movie, covers the first and second, but doesn't maybe cover the third. It's because we're so much more powerful when we make that free will choice to connect. And one of the things that he has shown is that we get to be his hands. We get to be his voice. We get to be the ever-increasing light, a touchstone between heaven and earth, if we choose to be. It's that same place where he allows me to roll a pencil across the table with my thought, or to turn the TV off or on, or you know, all these little playthings, opening a flower from bud into bloom, or making a seed grow while it's in my hand. Those are just places to help me open up that analytical mind and say, this happens in a small way, but because of this, I now open in a bigger way, where really I do expect the miracles to happen with the healing, where I do expect the bigger things to occur, where I can wave my hand and the car that was too close now moves over, and you know, just different things. He allows us to play. It's that place of connection where then when the bigger things come, we don't have any fear, we don't have any doubt. We can be that place of change. And he said that more and more people are going to be seeing who that they truly are, and that we're to be encouraging one another to remember who he is and who one another is. It's that same place of loving God with your whole heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbors, yourself, that unity, and reminding them to fan their flames and helping them to fan their flames, to take that spark to become this beautiful torchlight in the middle of the darkness. We get to participate with this change.
And I think it's so important that we do remember that we are divine and that is our heritage. And I really love the way you pointed out being the droplet of water that merges with the ocean. And, you know, so many of us have described this too during our near-death states, not losing our sense of individuality, but simultaneously being totally merged with the One. And I couldn't feel where Juliet left off and Source began. It was just all merge together, and it's the most profound and beautiful, beautiful state to be in. And just recalling it draws me to tears, and whenever something painful happens, I just reflect on that. I draw myself back to these experiences, and it's a wonderful reminder of the truth of who we really are, because we're not, you know, as some of the religionists would project, these sinful, awful beings. Not by a long shot. We are such bearers of light, and
yes,
it's amazing when people are able to tap into this. So I think it's really interesting. All of these indie ears once again, and another interesting thing about this, with my case too, it wasn't because of medical advancements or technology that brought me back. I went through what is considered a spontaneous recovery, and that had nothing to do with the physicians or the machinery. It was spirit. It was the light source that actually brought me back and told me that I had work to do.
I believe that.
Oh, boy.
I've seen people wake out of comas with the touch of a hand. I've seen cancers of all kinds go away.
I'm one of those. I was in comatose for over 6 weeks. And actually flatlined on my birthday, but it was the light, and I remember being told that I had to come back into this plane, which broke my heart beyond any heartbreak imaginable, I might add. But the interesting thing about that, too, is that I was also told to not identify with this plane, to not be involved, that I was just passing through, and that I was to share the fact that we live forever. So it's interesting that you talk about the court, the cosmic court. And whenever I've given a talk, I said, okay, well, here's the verdict, everyone. You've all been sentenced to eternal life. You don't get to die. Sorry.
Yes. And it can give such confidence because it really doesn't matter. Just like if you are out on the ocean. I mean, here in Southern California, the ocean is just right there. And often the waves get quite high. When you're on top of the wave, there's the bright, the sun, the seagulls.
Oh, yeah.
You can see the beach. You can see everything beautiful. And the next thing you know, you're between the gullies of the waves, and it seems like they're going to crash in around you, and everything is dark. If you remember that it doesn't matter if you're on top of the wave or in the gully, because you've got a life vest around you. You're already swimming. You're already safe. It doesn't matter if these bodies continue to live or not. Our spirit does. And all of our experiences that we have ever had with every life, none of that is lost. Death is just like taking a jacket and hanging it up in the closet. You don't lose your identity because you put your jacket up in your closet. You continue to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, when you had your death experience, I take it that you also didn't know your body was, quote-unquote, dead. Is that correct?
I was pretty sure I had died.
You were sure that you had died. Okay. Because it was so interesting. I continued to be conscious, and so when I had been told, you know, there's all this lapse of time that had gone by, I had been told that I had been in a coma and flatlined, and I said, oh, really? Well, I never experienced being unconscious. And that's, you know, that's so typical that when people experience near-death states, or death states more accurately, they don't know that their bodies are, you know, have died or what have you, because they just continue being conscious and aware and moving, although in a different state.
And that lapse of time is so true. It's when I came back to the body, 3 hours had passed. And for me, the near-death experience was, you know, 5 or 10 minutes.
Wow. And for me, I just had absolutely no sense of time, but it it was Boxing Day, 26 December through 6 February. So that's a number of weeks that can't be accounted for, quote, quote. And yet I remember being vividly conscious, and I've documented that, and I've only documented it in part, of course, because so much happened. But it's really interesting to think about this, and then the profound love, and it never leaves you, even after you've come back into this plane. There's always that clarity of memory.
Yes.
From that.
And many people forget who they are. So that's why it's so important for us who have had a defining moment in our lives, whether it's been a near-death experience or something else, whatever it has been that connects us to love, to be able to share that with one another and to encourage one another, because it will help them remember each who they are and to have the confidence within themselves. And that same place of confidence helps them connect not only to one another and the subconscious talk of the spirit and paying attention to that and bringing it to consciousness, but also their connection to the big guy. In that place of participation, I was shown that it's like we're in a cosmic soup. And when we have an indent with somebody, it brings them out of that cosmic soup. For example, like the old radios, and on one station you might go to 98.5 and it be a country station, and then you dial through the static and you get to another station that's a classical station at 104.7. Okay, those are indents, those are identifications, those are addresses of where those stereo channels are. Now, when we have an interaction with somebody, if something touches our heart, well, we have the compassion or love, whether it's something we see on TV or in a newspaper or a friend calls us up or any way that connection happens and our heart is moved, that's that place that we get to participate in shining the light. That's that place where we now can make connection with a big guy to help send more opportunities. The big guy gives each of us opportunities. It's like a big field, and he plants a rose bush here, a rose bush there, another rose bush. When we pray, it's not going to go against free will of whatever is going on of that person, but it's like another rose bush is planted, another one here, another one there. So that person has a lot more opportunity to see the better choices. But it's still up to them to gather up those flowers. But when we pray for something that doesn't have free will, such as a storm, immediate change is done. I was shown it's like a pencil eraser that erases this much trauma. And how much it erases has to do with our confidence. Just like at the original near-death experience, I saw prayers wafting up like incense to God.
Yes.
They were being gathered by angels, and some prayers were like sort of shady, shadowy, smoky looking, and some were very, very bright. And so I asked what the difference was. And I was told that the shadowy ones are when we pray saying, "Father, I don't know if you hear me or not, but..." And the bright ones are, "Father, I know you hear me." So that's what the difference is, our awareness of our connection and how much can be transformed. We get to participate. We're spirit living in physical bodies. So we get to be a touchstone for change and participation in this great shift, even if it's from our own living room, even if it's from our own car. This is not about us going down and picketing the local union or writing hate letters against the government. It's nothing
exactly.
About that.
Exactly.
This isn't about judgment, and this is not about focusing on darkness. This is about focusing on the light and expanding upon that.
I was thinking about that just a few days ago. I was thinking about the fact that some people go out and protest, and I thought, well, I'd rather expend my energy doing something positive, doing something loving, doing something that will really create a solution, a positive, loving solution, as opposed to protesting or making noise. I want to make positive noises, again, creating solutions. And I love the way a friend spells it, S-O-U-L-U-T-I-O-N-S, solutions. And I just think that's beautiful. I want to thank Kathy O'Brien for that. That's just so precious, because this is so true. And another point that I want to make, that and of course everything that you were talking about when describing the sojourn that you experienced with the fire, was listening to the voice and also the telepathy that we experience. How very important it is to pay attention to that, to honor it, to not question it, because again, we are multidimensional. And you listened to that voice, and consequently, it saved your lives. And you know, we'll pick up on friends and loved ones, and then we get a telephone call or an email. And then, for example, when I was doing mostly what I'm doing now is remote healing, because I live in such a remote location, so I don't see a whole lot of people. So I do a lot of remote Reiki and healing work, you know, back to the UK, or, you know, people throughout North America and even elsewhere. And so we set up a time, and interestingly, it is so exciting when the person reports back to me, goodness me, I don't know what you did, but I felt it. And we'll compare notes, and it's amazing how completely aligned they are. So yeah. This is more proof that all of this stuff is absolutely real. And
that's that place of indent that you have made. And that's that same reason why when I do distant healing, having either a photograph's not necessary, but at least their name and where they're at. Now that's that identity. That's that indent. The big guy desires to heal. He's like a big electrical power company, I guess. I get to be just one of his power cords right now. And it's up to the person to receive, and however much they want to receive. It's all about receiving love. So his desire is to heal. My desire is to heal. And if the person calling out also has that desire to heal, it's going to happen. There's no such thing as distant healing. He knows where everybody is, and he knows not only the things that they may be consciously asking about, but the secondary things as well. And so that indent has been made.
Yes, I do the same thing, and then I also share with people that love and the telepathy and this connection, this healing connection, is not affected or influenced by time-space, because time-space, as you know, doesn't really exist.
Right. In fact, one of the books that I wrote called Forward from the Mind, we did a research study, because we have people fly here to the Divine Wellness Institute from all over the world. So we did a research study asking basically 110 questions of people who have come to the Institute and those who had received distant healing. We had the same high percentage, 83%, of whether they came here or not, that were healed.
Oh,
but,
that's wonderful.
But it's up to them on how they want to receive. If they feel they can't receive unless they're physically under my hands, then here they can come here, even though it's not actually necessary from the bigger point of view. But if that's how they're more open to receive, we don't stop them from flying in.
Well, that's a good point to make, too. You know, indeed, healing is a two-way street. And I've been doing healing for 40 years, and it's just been absolutely tremendous. And I'm just a conduit, you know, I'm just an instrument for the healing power of love to be transmitted. And that's, I just feel so honored to be doing this work. It brings me such joy, and it puts me in a place very, very similar to where I was during my transcendent experiences.
Yes.
And this is wonderful.
Like touching the face of God.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we've just got a few more minutes. Would you like to share with our listeners the titles of your books and your websites and how people can access them?
Certainly. We have two websites, www.tiffanysnow.com. If you do a search on the internet, you can either find me by the term Blessed Tiffany. A lot of people have coined that term for me since they have received so many blessings from Father through my hands, and that's all that connection of love, or through the name Tiffany Snow. And Father Billy has a website called thefourthhealing.com, and the two websites are connected together, so whatever's easiest for you to remember. Now, we have four books. The one that I want to direct the most attention to, the most important book that I'll ever write, is all the information that's been coming through since Stigmata, and it's called God's Workbook, Shifting into Light, How to Transform Your Life and Global Events with Angelic Help. We've even received prayers written by God that even just in our free will, when we say amen or so be it to it. Remember I was saying how the different prayers, some were wafting up sort of shadowy and some were very bright. These prayers are like laser prayers.
Oh, there you go.
And they're about forgiveness, about awareness, about transformation. And they're called divine decrees, and they're here in this workbook. And I also have The Power of Divine, a Healer's Guide. And Forward from the Mind talks about quantum mechanics and this place of connection, and also the different scientific studies that have been done. And then my first book is called Psychic Gifts in the Christian Life, different ways that I had been utilized from the beginning, right after the near-death experience, to help find missing children, working with the FBI, many different adventures.
Was that in Nashville?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and beyond Nashville as well. A couple of years after the near-death experience, I was moving around. So I've been utilized in a lot of different places.
Boy, that sounds familiar. Yes, yes.
And we also are doing live teleconferences and also live distant healings. And it's been such a beautiful place of connection and unity during those times. And we also have downloaded on the website many different topics and many different things. So basically, 24/7, people have information available to them.
Well, that's great. And I've also got yours and Billy's profile on my website. So if people forget, you can always go to toarddelight.org/tiffanysnow.html, and then there's a picture of you and Father Billy, and both of those pictures are hot links back to your websites too. And is that how people will be able to find out about your teleconferences, etc.?
Yes, on our website has all the event page and schedules and all of that. And I'd like to take this time to also thank you for the work that you're doing. I mean, the big guy never said this life would be easy, but he did say we'd never be alone.
True story. Well, I feel so honored indeed to be doing this work. It brings me tremendous joy, and it's been so wonderful having you and Billy on the show. I've really been looking forward to this. I just thought this will be such a tremendous testimony and example of the communion and how important it is to trust in that. So with all of my heart, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. We'll have to do this again for sure. I want to let everybody know you've been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. We've been speaking with Father Billy Clark and Tiffany Snow about their tremendous experience and sojourn with the Southern California fires that happened in the fall of this last year. The article is on the website towardthelight.org, again, towardthelight.org/tiffanysnow.html. You can read the full account, and of course, we just spoke about that on this show, and the show will be archived and soon to be placed on the website as well. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Next week, we will have Ula Jacobs on our show, and it will be wonderful talking with her. So please tune in next Sunday for another transmission of Toward the Light. Blessings and lots of love and light to all. We'll speak to you next week.